Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everyone. My name is Josh Rosenberg. I am your host, and I am so psyched to be here for this episode with you. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode with the amazing Eric Krasno and Stanton Moore, who have a duo project called Krasno Moore Project, otherwise known as KMP. We're so happy to have them here for this one. If you're new to Roadcase, welcome to the Roadcase community. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. So long to have you along for this one. There's a number of different ways that you can get involved with the Roadcase community. First and easy way is to follow us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also reach out and send questions, comments, concerns. Would love to hear what you're thinking. If you have a specific question about Roadcase, guests, a particular episode, please send it in. I'm going to start to read these on these episodes in this intro. Would love to read yours. Please send it to info@roadcasepod.com. Can't wait to get that. You can find out more information about the show at our website, www.roadcasepod.com. Great way to support Roadcase is to subscribe to Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. If you're on Spotify, for example, which is a really popular listening platform, there's a follow box just there at the Roadcase homepage. It's as easy as clicking that. If you're on Apple Podcast, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. Just click that. Doing so on those two platforms not only helps support Roadcase to subscribe, but also will allow you to receive live updates when new episodes come into the world. Another great way and quick and easy way to support Roadcase is to rate and review Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. So I'll walk you through real quick. If you're on Spotify, there's a little box with stars underneath that aforementioned follow box. Just click on that. It's as easy as that. On Apple Podcasts, from the Roadcase homepage, scroll up a little bit. You'll see a bunch of stars and a place to write a review. Just go ahead and smash a bunch of those stars. And if you write a few words as a review, it really helps out the show. And that's just a quick and easy way to help support Roadcase. So for this episode, as I mentioned, we have Eric Krasno and Stanton Moore. I am so happy to have them on the show. Eric is a founding member of Lettuce and Soul Live. Stanton is a founding member of Galactic and Garage A Toi. They've also done tons of collaborations with a multitude of artists throughout their respective careers and have now come together to create Krasno Moore Project, otherwise known as KMP, along with organist Eric Finland. And they have a new album, the Krasno Moore Project, and it's entitled Book of Queens. It's a concept album, and it is comprised solely of covers paying tribute to amazing female artists, both historic and contemporary, including Kacey Musgraves, Billie Eilish, Brittany Howard, Sharon Jones, her, and Aretha Franklin, just to name a few. It is a stunning album. In terms of these two finally working together, it was, in their own words, the exact right time to do so, and they nailed it. The album was recorded at The Barn, Levon Helm Studios in Woodstock, New York. I am so psyched to have these two guys on the show and to have been able to talk to them and present this interview to you all. I just saw their live show here in Chicago at City Winery a few weeks ago, and it was absolutely spectacular. We discuss a lot about this project, which is multifaceted in so many different ways for both of them and reveals their art of live performance and the nature of their musical influence and how performance has shaped their careers. We talk about so much here and get into a lot of different super interesting areas, both in terms of their own musical influences, careers, directions. It's just, these two are a fascinating duo and absolutely fascinating individually. I got to talk to them about their musical lives as well as their development and personal, both personally and professionally. It was just absolutely amazing. And I know that you're going to learn so much about these two as well. I'm so glad that you are here for this interview. And I want to send a special thank you to Eric Krasno and Stanton Moore for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Hey, Stanton, Eric, how are you guys doing? Stanton, you're in the green room at Tips, I see.
Yes, we're doing great, man. We just got back Sunday night from our first 2.5 week tour, so 3 full weekends.
Yeah.
With the Krasno Moore Project, and I think I can speak for all of us when I say that it was pretty wonderful. It was a blast.
Yeah. I'm sure Kras, you would agree with that.
Absolutely. Good, great crowds, you know, great reception. We had a blast playing together. The new album came out in that first week of the tour. So yeah. It's just been all around great.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. I enjoyed seeing the show. I saw the Chicago one, met you guys briefly after the show. I had such a great time. And of course, we'll talk about your collab with one another in the various and how that's kind of a personification of your entire careers, and this coming together of the two of you is spectacular for so many different reasons. But this new album for Krasno Moore Project, Book of Queens, that came out just about a couple days after, I think it was, it's International Women's Day on March 8th. I think the album was released on March 13th. This is a cover and tribute to women in music. Amazing songs, both older and just brand new songs that have just come out, like Kacey Musgraves, Billie Eilish, Brittany Howard of Alabama Shakes, just amazing stuff. Do one of you guys want to talk about sort of what propelled you to do that? I read a funny quote about how, you know, you wanted to make your wives proud. I'm sure you guys do that all the time. it's always good to make the wife happy, as we all know. I don't know. You're married, Eric. Are you, Stanton, yeah. Are you married too?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And both of our wives are named Lauren.
Oh shit! Also,
the Laurens, as we call them.
Yeah,
We came together during the last Jazz Fest, so last spring, and I think we spoke about it just before that. I think I called Stanton. I was like, "Hey, man, you know, we got the Jazz Fest trio gig coming up. What would you think about doing more?" And he really liked the idea, so. When we got together at Jazz Fest, we just started kicking around ideas because, you know, one of the things I said from the get-go, I was like, you know, in order to get this thing started, it'd be really cool to do a concept album and something that had like a strong through line. And, you know, I know musically that it would be great, but it'd be cool if there was something that kind of threaded this album together. So we just started kicking around ideas. And when we landed on the tribute to women in music, it just, for so many reasons, made sense. I mean, obviously just the precedent of paying tribute to these incredible artists was number one. And then just like, there's such a huge amount of music to choose from. And we just started going back and forth on songs we could do and artists to cover. It kind of just sparked excitement that even just beyond just playing together. And the wives liked it too.
Of course. And so did everyone else, by the way. You don't have to be a woman to enjoy this album. that probably goes without saying. But did you come up with contemporary artist ideas initially? Or because when you think of a tribute to women in music, sometimes that's kind of you can feel like let's cover some classic female artists. And then you throw in a Kacey Musgraves album. And Stanton, you might remember this at the show. Afterwards, I came up to you and I said, we were just chatting briefly at the merch table. And I said, I just saw a girl at the show, a younger woman. You know, everyone looks young to me these days. But like she was probably early 20s wearing a Kacey Musgraves t-shirt. And I'm like, you guys are getting it done. You're bringing, not only are you honoring women in music, but you're also potentially gathering a new audience for your own music because of covering Kacey Musgraves and Billie Eilish and others. I forwarded my daughter who goes to Tulane, Stanton, and I want to talk to about, we'll talk plenty about New Orleans. She's a junior at Tulane. I sent her the cover of Casey Musgrave. She loves Casey Musgrave. Like, look, these cool dudes from these amazing bands are doing these covers of these incredible contemporaries. She was like, cool. It sounds really great. So there's that there's that outreach. But where did that kernel come? Let's do some contemporary artists, I guess. Can you talk about the choices?
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely remember you telling me that, and I even told it to Crass. Check this out. And that was super cool. And, you know, it's what's so great about starting to work together is a lot of this has just, there's been a lot of synergy, and there's been a lot of just natural development of things. So, you know, I think I might have mentioned, you know, Crass said, oh, you know, maybe the unifying thing could be like we play, you know, music from our upbringing, you know, and I think I might have thrown out the idea, maybe we do like all women in music. And then like in the next sentence, Crass is like, oh, cool, we could do that. But if we do that, let's do some contemporary artists as well as classic artists. It's like things escalate and develop very quickly when we're brainstorming. And you know, it just all made sense really quickly. And it's like, and then we started maybe later that day or the next day, Crass sent over a playlist in Spotify named Book of Queens. And I was like, that's a brilliant name.
That's cool. Yeah. All right.
For the record. And so it all just like, you know, came together really quickly. So, you know, it wasn't like, okay, we need to sit down and, do we do contemporary artists or it was like, yeah, it should be contemporary artists and classic artists. Yes, I agree. Okay, now who are the artists? Like, you know, we should do some Aretha. Yeah, we should do some Billie Eilish. I love Billie Eilish. Great idea. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, you know, I was talking about this earlier. One thing that, you know, has been great about working with Stanton is we don't get stuck on anything really. You know what I mean? It's kind of like as soon as we start talking about something, we land on an idea and we go for it. Mm-hmm. From the concept of the record to the song selection to even the guest artists. Like I was on the phone with Branford like the moment we talked about having him. You know what I mean? Like, you know, as soon as any concept came up, we both were just like, okay, let me call that guy. Okay, let's do this. Or, you know, Stan was like, I got a drum idea for Slow Burn, and he just started doing it, recorded himself, sent it to me. So, you know, everything just was, it was just working fast. And, but also, you know, it was all the ideas were well thought out as well. So it wasn't like we were being hasty, but we were just working.
Yeah. Kind of just came together and you guys had a ton of ideas. Does that happen? That must happen quite frequently when you're doing, you've done a number of different collab albums. Both of you have several different projects going and, you know, not only from a theme perspective, from kind of like this way that it quickly comes together. Crass, is that something that's atypical or typical, or what surprised you about this go round?
Well, this was exceptionally fast. Because a lot of times, you know, first of all, everyone's busy. I get that. But a lot of musicians, you know, aren't always quick on the draw what I should say is there's a lot of artists I've been like, hey, let's do the project, or said to me, let's do a project. And years go by and we say again, yeah, let's do that thing. And three years later, let's do that thing.
I mean, it happens in every industry too.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that when we worked together, it was like within weeks we had a studio booked, a concept, an album title.
Wow.
We were rehearsing via Zoom, putting demos together. And you know, we're less than a year later, we have an album out, we've toured already.
Wow.
We have agents and manage, we have a whole team. I think, you know, the other thing was a lot of people did like the idea of number one, us working together.
Yeah.
And number two, the idea of what we were putting together and just the demos sounded cool and unique.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think, you know, it was not only that the ideas happened fast. I actually think the ideas were pretty good, right? And it had some oomph behind it.
You know? Yeah. Good ideas are a good thing, so I can't help but think when you tell me about how, you know, a lot of guys, you know, you work with so many people and you're like, hey, let's do this. And you see them 2 years later and like, yeah, okay, let's do this. I can't help but think, was that something that was occurring with you, with the two of you, for all those years since you first met at, I guess, Kraus, you were going to school in Massachusetts in like the mid-90s or something, and where you guys originally met. Was this like the final time you guys got together and finally did something? Had you been talking about getting together over those number of years? Was it the same scenario, but now it kind of happened, but it happened at a really cool, fast pace?
Well, I think we'd always loved playing together. I just think it was, I'm sorry, I just cut you off, but there's like times where the timing was good too, because we both were like open to taking on new things. Yeah. You know, Stanton's had so many projects over the years and so have I, and it was good timing in terms of, yeah, I'd love to go out and do something a little bit different, maybe play some seated venues, multi-night stands. But I'll let Stan speak.
Yeah,
on
Stan,
that
where did you stand?
Yeah,
on that?
Well, to be honest, Josh, I don't think that we ever were like, okay, let's start working together. You know, we always, as Kraus said, we always loved playing with each other, and then we might do, you know, a trio gig during Jazz Fest. We had a trio gig that started becoming an annual trio gig with me and Kraus and Will Blades, and then we did a couple of times. We did this astounding. Which we have to revisit, this astounding lineup of me, Kraus, O'Teal on bass, and Ivan Neville.
Nice.
And that was called The Heat. And
another one I got to write down now, The Heat. Okay.
Right. But with
that was a good one.
Yeah. I think that we were all just had so much going on that we didn't even say, oh, we should start doing this. It was like, well, that was great. All right. See ya. You got to go that way and do Soul Live. I got to go this way and do Galactic. It's good seeing you as always. All right. See you next year, Jazz Fest. Or, well, see you on Jam Cruise, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But this was the first time that, like, you know, Kraus approached me and was like, hey, man, what would you think about, you know, really doing some more stuff together? And I think it was the exact right time when, you know, I think Kraus's schedule started to open a little bit more. Galactic wanted to start touring a little less, so my schedule was starting to open up a little bit more. And as soon as he called, you know, it just all made total sense to me. I was like, I hadn't thought about that, but it makes total sense. So as Kraus said, it was right before Jazz Fest he called me. So I went downstairs. You know, my wife was outside, so I went and sat with her outside. And as I came out of the house, she's like, what's going on? You have this huge smile on your face. What just happened? I was like, well, Kraus just called and asked if I would want to start working together with him more. I think it's a brilliant idea. I could just, you know, I get really good feelings about things, and I think that I have good intuition on a lot of things.
Yeah.
And as soon as Kraus called, I could see exactly what we could do. And within a year, I think we're even a little further along than what I knew and felt that we could do together.
Yeah. It's such a world of collabs. I mean, you guys both, Kraus, you were in Lettuce and Soul Live, and now with solo projects and various other collaborations, and Stanton, of course, with Galactic, Garage à Trois. It's this world of collaborations. Is there from in either of your perspectives, Stanton, since I'm talking to you, like I can see your face, but is there always sort of in your world of New Orleans music and being kind of that a little bit of a center of the universe there? Is there a constant push and pull? How does that does that work? I mean, how do you look at Galactic versus your collabs? Is that the thing that kind of got traction and that you tour with? And what? Tell me a little bit about how you structure that all in your mind and your time and where you want to go. I'm really curious to hear about that.
Yeah, so for years, it's been, well, we'll let the Galactic schedule fall into place, and we usually book 8 to 12 months in advance, which leaves plenty of time to figure out other things. So I know where my holes in the Galactic schedule are. And now that Galactic is starting to, you know, tour a little less, I'm starting to have more holes, you know, more openings.
Yeah.
And we try to just get on top of it with our team, with the Cries of More project team, which we abbreviate to KMP. So KMP, we just look and we say, okay, all right, let's go for these dates. And then we let Galactic know we're gonna fill these dates, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of communication that goes on between the KMP team and the Galactic team. Everybody gets along. Everybody's known each other for years. Mm-hmm. And so we're just strategizing way in advance.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like it's a recognized factor of what your musical life is, that you're going to have, you know, a solid underpinning of Galactic from time. And is the less touring of Galactic just a factor of kind of the members becoming older, maybe not wanting to tour as much, or having just so much experience in the industry, you start meeting other people, you start meeting Krez, you want to do other projects. Is that kind of a factor as well? Obviously.
I think, you know, it's a case by case basis. Mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. I love playing with and in different situations. Mm-hmm. And I love playing with all kinds of different people in all kinds of different musical genres, you know? So, yeah. I mean, my piano trio, I'm swinging out with brushes and playing ballads and, you know, just played with that last night. Right. Mm-hmm. So I love doing that. But then this project makes so much sense because it plays to Krasz and I's strengths, mm-hmm. you know, me playing grooves and playing funk and playing in an organ trio is something that I've done for years and years. And obviously Krasz is incredibly experienced in the organ trio format. But what's so exciting about this project is that we bring in so many special guests, both on the record and then live. You know, so, you know, here I am on a record with Branford Marsalis, Corey Henry, and Robert Randolph. And then yet, you know, during our Blue Note run, I got to play with two of the greatest bass players in the world, Christian McBride and Will Lee. And that's all with this project. And that's all, like, you know, right out the gate. So
Everyone wants to play with you guys, clearly.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, this project is so great because it exposes me to being able to, you know, play with Krasz, who I love playing with a great organ player that I'm just learning, you know, that I've just learned about through this project. But we're just loving playing with each other. And then we bring in all these special guests. So it's really checking a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, yeah. Krasz, what's your, I'd love to hear what your sort of perspective is on collabs versus main projects and what you're all up to with that and kind of where you're at in that.
Well, I mean, I've focused more on, but I mean, everything I do is a collaboration in some sort, you know? So even my solo albums, my, you know, last one, I worked with a guy named Otis McDonald who produced it with me. Yeah. And he and I also made a record called King Canyon.
Fantastic, you know, stuff. So, but Otis you. Also go, I was kind of confused because Otis also goes by Joe Begale.
That's his real name.
That's his actual name. Otis McDonald is the project name.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, which is a whole other long story, but yeah
very confusing when you name a project name an actual name that's not yours. But it's,
yeah, okay. So I call him Otis when I'm speaking on interviews, but I mean I call him Joe when I call him on the phone.
Okay.
But yeah, so he and I, and then we are working on another collaborative album already. So, you know, I'm always working on different things in the studio.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, with this project, I just saw how, and I loved working in the studio with Stanton, actually. It was amazing. But I also just saw where this could go live. And then, and like Stanton said, it speaks to the strengths of both he and I. And, you know, we play well to each other's strengths as a result, you know, and I think that, you know, dynamically it's different, you know, than a lot of the other projects that we do in terms of, like, you know, Stanton's playing some brushes in this project. He's doing a lot of like shuffles and different grooves. And like this album really is a showcase for Stanton in a lot of ways, where it's like there's just so many different stylistic choices.
Yeah.
But it's not abrupt. It all fits together. Mm-hmm. It all flows together.
Did you have a yeah. hard time tracking it, like deciding what you were going to do?
Not really. I think part of that was, on Stanton's behalf, how prepared he was. And then we did not rehearse. In fact, he met Eric Finland, the organ player, the first day of the session.
Yeah.
And we only had 3 days. So, but we knew what we were going to do. We had the songs kind of mapped out and he knew what he wanted to play on the songs. So right. It was just, when we got in there, it was more about tones and some arrangements.
Yeah.
But as soon as we sat down and started playing, it made sense. Right. And I also just saw where it could go live. And in this last couple of weeks, it's kind of become a band, in terms of like our improv sections are really free and we support each other.
Absolutely.
And when we can solo and improvise. But again, there's a lot of different styles. Even though it's an organ trio, there's a lot of different dynamics in the show, which is always something I want. As a guitar player, I play better in I enjoy playing in a very like soft, low dynamic volume, but I also love getting people hyped up and so this has a little bit of all of it. It's not like between 7 and 10. We go between like 1 and 10 in terms of dynamics, which is a really cool thing. And we can play a festival or a rock club, but we can also play the Blue Note and a seated venue, and it doesn't feel out of place,
Yeah, I can attest to that. It was a phenomenal show, and you guys clearly have a massive respect for one another. I watched like Kraz's Stanton was taking a solo. I watched you watch him, and the smile on your face was absolutely 100% genuine, and just a sense of admiration and respect. And the same with Stanton when you were watching Eric solo, and also Kraz, and not only that, Eric Finland blew me away, just amazing. So also during the show, it was really great how you guys would take your time and explain the songs and talk about the album, talk about the nature of the album. I mean, the album kind of calls for that, right? Because we're doing tributes to women. Why'd you put one song on? What is this? We were covering contemporary artists. For those that came to the show that hadn't already listened to the album, that was all wonderful. So yeah, it's playing, it's absolutely playing really great live.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And to comment, a little bit, and this is something that Kraz both talked about a little bit, is that in the main projects that we've done over mm-hmm. the years, I think the general public would associate with Soul Live for Kraz, Galactic for me, neither one of us talk on the microphone in those projects, but we have been talking on the microphone in our solo projects, right? For years. And now, it's a little bit, it's still a little bit challenging just being the sole leader, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And all of that's on you. But then when you've got somebody who's been doing, what you've been doing on their end, they've been, Kraz has been doing his own solo projects. He's been working on, addressing the audience. It takes a while to get comfortable with that, Yeah.
It sounds like it's taking you a while to get comfortable with that. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, it has for me.
Yeah.
I say it takes one. I imagine it took, it might have taken Kraz that, but it definitely took me time. But I've been doing it for 10 years now, with my piano trio. Uh-huh. But then when you get with somebody who you feel is your partner and feel is your equal, and you're sharing those duties, it just makes it that much more comfortable, that much more authentic, that much more, fun.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a lot, I just did an interview right before this one, mm-hmm. Relics. And so some of the questions came up about, song by song and all this. There's a lot about this project that I don't think I would have been able to do 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So to be as comfortable on the mic with the audience, with Kraz, to be able to authentically and honestly play ballads with brushes, all the different shuffles, all the different styles that we're playing. But it's because I've been spending the last 10 years doing that, you know, with my piano trio and other things. But now coming with this, it's great because everything I've been working on for the last 10 years has now become a strength, and we get to present it together. And all the things that Kraz has been working on for the last 10 years. And now we get to present this together, and it feels very natural and very genuine and honest too.
It sounds like a fantastic sort of moment for you in that sense. And you're sort of framing it that way, that it's this musical growth of playing so many different genres over the last decade or so, and even farther back, I would presume, of course. But also from a personal standpoint of being up there and being the man in the band, which seems like that's almost probably a bigger challenge for you, it sounds like, but one that clearly, as I had mentioned, you guys absolutely succeeded at, both of you. And Kraz, I've seen you, I was at Tulane University Parents Weekend. They did that Tipping Point benefit.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
at the
yeah.
Fillmore. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. I think and you were the musical director for that and played guitar. You were on stage for the whole set, if I remember correctly. Maybe you walked off a couple times, but I wasn't actually keeping a scorecard, you're comfortable like passing it around, introducing people, talking about a song, giving a brief history of a performer, et cetera. So that's kind of a zone where you seem to feel comfortable with that. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no. And echoing, you know, Stanton's point, it's something that develops over time. You know, I've been touring on my solo stuff for about 10 years also, more so in the last few years. But like Stanton said, you know, on so many levels, having, you know, it's hard to be in a band where eight people are the leaders. But when two people that kind of have a similar vision, it's really great because, you know, on a lot of levels, one being like when we're on stage, it's nice to kind of stand talks and introduce a song and the crowd also engages with him because they love his work.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I talk about a song, they might engage with me about, you know, a song I did on one of my records, and we'll talk about Stanton's trio and then Finley. So there's a lot of things about this partnership that I didn't even realize when we first were putting it together would come to fruition. Mm. Like, so I think like when this tour, it brought to light, oh, and even really on the first gig, because we didn't sit there. So at Levon's, we did 3 days of recording and then we did our first gig.
Yeah.
And we never sat down and said, we're going to talk between songs and we're going to do this and you introduce that song and you would do that. Like, we just did it and everyone loved it. And every time we spoke about a song and told the story, they loved it. And to be totally honest, when I go to a show, I love hearing, I've always been into like the storyteller kind of vibe. And so, you know, I mean, it's a balance because we're not going to do that all night, but it's a cool way to engage the crowd. And like Stan said, like, I don't know if I would have been able to do that 10 years ago or if we would have been able to present the project that we're doing in the same way in any other time in our careers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool because you're just like mature humans that are up there just talking about your craft. And I especially loved, Stanton, how you had, I don't know if you do this in most of your trios, but when you're off to the side and have the kit set so that you're looking towards, you know, you were looking towards Kraz and obviously, and Eric was on the, and Finland was on the other side. That's also kind of is that a generalized aspect of an organ trio playing live that you're going to be not all the way in the back? Because, and it's great because I never get to stand hardly enough get to stand side stage. I love watching a drummer play from that perspective. Is that sort of a general stage configuration, just to kind of take it to logistics for a minute?
So yes and no, but some trios set up that way. I have been setting up that way with my piano trio where I'll be stage left, but not necessarily perpendicular like that. And with this trio, you know, I tend to like things to be really clean and organized looking.
Yeah.
And so
I got that from you for just, you know, I don't know, the aesthetic.
Yeah. No, I just want things to look and to sound and to be presented in a way that's like, you know, clean and organized. And so with this trio, there have been a couple stages where I kind of had to set up diagonal a little bit, but still stage left. And then decided, no, we really like it when we can be perpendicular, to where, and it's great because then I can really focus on Kraz and Finland, and we're just all in a straight line. But then if I want to engage with the audience, they're right there.
Yeah.
But they're not, the audience isn't ever a distraction, but I'm never, you know, if I need to focus on the music and focus on the guys and focus on, oh, are we going to that next section yet? Or whatever we need to focus on, I'm focused. I'm not.
Is that a better angle than being right behind them? Do you like being able to see Kraz and then see Finland in the background right there? So then you have them both in your frame of vision without having to turn your head to the left or to the right if you were behind?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I've grown to really dig everyone being able to have instant eye contact. You don't even have to turn your head. You're just right there. And then, so...
Except for Kraz, you know, is on a swivel.
Sad?
Except for Kraz, who's on a swivel.
Yeah, but he can back up.
I back up and I can see both of them. Oh, you know, cool. Which has kind of been, we've been trying to do it where it's kind of like a kind of a crescent or a U shape where I'm like a little behind so I can kind of see everybody.
And, right.
You know, we all cue each other. And, you know, there's a lot of rehearsed music, but we're also playing a lot of improvised sections and things develop on the fly. And we, you know, our whole thing is, being able to communicate and be able to make switches on a dime, which is the beauty of a trio. Because it's like there's only three of us up there, so we can change keys and we can change sections and call a different tune. And it's not like we have to pass it down eight people.
Right. You know, it's right. Just you get it done. Right, you get a couple of solos, hardcore stuff going on, and then you sort of can just move on. Yeah. Actually, I hadn't thought about like needing to pass it around. That just complicates things and makes songs longer, I guess.
But also in just terms of like cueing, like there's times during the song where we might change keys on a dime, where Finland will be like, well, I'm going to the five chord, and he can just look at me and just go, and he'll just play a chord, or sometimes he'll just say five, or say whatever, and I'll with what wouldn't normally be there, we'll just go, you know. Whereas if you had a bass player and another keyboard player and a horn, you'd have to like be like, tell that guy that this is happening.
Or speak into like the onstage communication mic, right? Which is always sort of awkward from an audience perspective, because you're like, what is he saying on that? And why is he doing that? So it's really cool when you have to vocally or with your eyes and eye movements or gestures, you know, indicate a change or something like that. It's a fantastic format that, heretofore, I'm not entirely familiar with all the history and all the individuals and that are involved in organ trios, and I've just absolutely, utterly enjoyed digging into these to both of your vast catalogs from that perspective. When you know that you're going to be in that format, does recording it take on a different character, knowing that kind of an organ that you're going to be playing live as an organ trio? How does that interplay sort of work in your mind? And Kraz, do you want to just take that one? I'm happy to have you guys jump in whenever, Stan, by the way.
I wanted with this record, and I think we all did, it to feel like you were in the room. You know what I mean? Like that, and that was kind of that was the whole thing with being at Levon's to record it, was let's like make the room part of the band, you know what I mean?
Well, so like in the barn, did you, it's like, that's just an amazing place. I mean, is the studio is different than the barn, or you record in the barn?
We didn't move at all. We were in the barn. Wow. That's where we played the gig. We didn't move at all. We didn't use headphones. So like we were basically playing a gig with microphones on, you know, and that was something that, you know, was important to me in terms of the aesthetic of the album.
Yeah.
Of course, we wanted it to sound warm, and I wanted you to feel that wood, you know, like that you're in this place. And I think that came across, you know. We had, you know, the house engineer, Brendan, who mixes at Levon's, just record it for us, him and Connor. And then Jim Scott mixed it, who just really just stayed true to the aesthetic we had going into it, which was like, you know, we did a couple little overdubs on things, but it's pretty much you know, how we perform those songs is like what you're hearing on that record.
Yeah, it's great stuff. You know, I was glad, I was happy when I heard you recorded it at Levon's Barn. I just had Larry Campbell on the show with his wife, Teresa Williams, and Larry used to run Levon's band and be the band director there and ran the barn musical director for quite a while. So that was really cool. Stanton, how'd you feel? How'd you choose that studio, Stanton?
Yeah, so I had done a record there before. I did Groove Alchemy with my organ trio there. Mm-hmm. And we also filmed a DVD there and you know, filmed all the instructional stuff. But so I filmed all the performances and made the record there. So, you know, kind of similar to what we wanted to do. We wanted to film everything and we wanted to record everything. And because I had worked there before, when Kraz suggested, you know, I had just played Levon's. What would you think about doing it at Levon's? I instantly was like, that would be amazing. I love Levon's. Because, you know, for this trio, I knew, oh, that would be a great, perfect spot. And just like I said, you know, we could make the barn, make the room part of the band. So what was really cool, and, you know, again, I don't know that we necessarily realized this when we did it, but we set up in the same way that we do when we're on stage. Mm. So we came up with this unifying vibe with Kraz in the middle and me pointing right at Finland. And then that's the same exact positions that we stayed in to play in front of a live audience. So we made the record that way. We played our first gig that way. And then we just took that and we took it on the road.
Yeah. Well, you must come up with some interesting changes or discoveries when you take it on the road, right? You're like, oh, this song's happening in this way. And does it ever surprise you or please you in certain ways, or maybe even disappoint you? The fan reaction, maybe like the first time you got it, was it in different spots at some times, or was there times when it surprised you, Stan?
Well, I think, you know, we anticipated that people might sing along to some things, but you know, the first night we played Natural Woman live, everybody was singing along and we're just like, whoa. I mean, like, kind of like hair standing up on your
you don't get that very often, right? I would assume. No. Like, Kraz, you're doing Dead covers and Allman Brothers covers. I've read stuff where you're talking about how, oh, people will actually sing along to these. This is great. Kind of like a long time ago when you were first getting into it, you know? And I loved that perspective, but even I love this perspective of Stanton getting it now.
Yeah.
And there were certain songs that when we did them, I didn't know they would become the favorite, or they would become, you know, so, I mean, not that any of them get a bad reaction, but Natural Woman, I had no idea. I mean, of course it's a classic, but also as soon as we start playing it, people react to that one,
right,
which of course, I mean, it's a classic. When you combine Carole King and Aretha, I mean, that's what you're going to get. But, you know, Slow Burn also, too. Like, a lot of people have been really loving that song.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of a slower tempo, more chill vibe.
Yeah.
Like, I get so much response from that one as well, you know?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So just
go ahead.
To comment on that for a second, you know, recording Natural Woman, I think in the back of my mind, you know, I was thinking, okay, this is great. This is awesome. We may not even play this live because it might be too slow, right?
Yeah.
You know, spending 25 years, you know, in a heavy hitting funk band, you know, your mind thinks about that sometimes. How is this gonna come across live? Is this gonna get over live? Well, it's not gonna get over on an energy level, but it's gonna get over on an emotional connectivity level.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So we can play that song as low and as slow as we want. And the slower we play it, the more the audience connects and enjoys, and the more they sing out, the more the song breathes.
Right. Well, it's not very hard hitting, but let me just go semi-technical for just a moment. But Stanton, do you feel like you can punch a slower song like Slow Burn? Because I felt like Kraz, you have, there's so much to offer on that song from a guitar perspective because the melody is so beautiful. Where do you guys kind of, for, let's take that song, for example, the push and pull of trying to make that song significant in a live setting. Does that, is it come as much from the drums as it does from you, Kraz?
Absolutely. I mean, what Stanton does on that song actually in particular is really hard to do. And it's really creative the way that he came up with that groove. Yeah. I remember thinking of it. And when I thought of it, I just thought, oh, we'll take a 16th note, like do like how you would normally take a song and put a funk kind of groove under it, or like an R&B groove. And he came up with this whole other thing that made it really its own vibe.
That's like the definition of Stanton Moore. Every time I hear another song, I'm like, what the fuck? It's another beat that he's creating now? Everything, every song, every project. You're laughing. Is that like Stanton?
I love it. I love hearing that. I mean,
I'm like, holy shit. Like, how many different kinds of ways can you hit the goddamn drum, Stanton?
Well, that's, I think that that's a byproduct of me just loving playing in so many different situations, playing in so many different genres, playing with so many different people. And so then, you know, hopefully what is my goal, and hopefully I'm achieving it, is to grow. And in my, in between 50 and 60, you know, in my 50s, be the best I've ever been, you know? Yeah. And then when I hear something, not in any kind of contrived way, be able to draw from all that experience and be like, oh, I can hear what I want this to sound like. And then I can figure out a way to create that because of all the experience that I've had. So I think that that's what I'm starting to see. And that's what, you know, it means the world to me when I hear that it's not just me thinking, oh, I came up with something kind of cool. When you tell me that, that means the world. Cause it's like, oh, it's actually, people are actually able to hear it, you know, hear that I'm growing and coming up with new ideas, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that it didn't sound like that 10 years ago, but I'm saying like, it's incredibly impressive, and knowing what your resume is and your background and where you've come from and how you've come up in New Orleans. And it's just, I look to you as kind of the North Star of New Orleans music from my own perspective, because I just, it can learn so much about, cause it's so beat oriented that you just play that New Orleans beat, and there's so many different types and so many different nuances, and you kind of, you have it all. Just okay.
Well, thank you.
don't mean to gush too much, but and Kraz, so let's go back to Slow Burn for a second. I want to focus on guitar. If I told somebody just out of the blue that, hey, listen to this song because it's a cover, it's an instrumental cover of Slow Burn, and listen to this amazing guitarist kind of just nail this melody line. But then you create something that's extraordinarily unique and then compelling, and that you continually want to listen to. What are the kind of things that are going through your mind and to make it different and compelling for those that already know the song?
Well, I thought that melody was so strong, you know, and I remember telling Stan, I was like, it seems a little out of the box, but this melody and this song have kind of haunted me for a while. So specifically with that song, I just like wanted to learn the melody. And I kind of initially recorded myself just playing it and sent it to them, where I was like kind of outlining the chords and the melody at the same time, like doing a kind of like what could be like a solo guitar piece. Mm-hmm. And I put a ton of reverb on it and tremolo on it.
Yeah.
And that kind of did set like somewhat of a path for what the sonically the guitar would sound like on the album. So I remember sending it to Stanton. He was like, oh, I love the like tremolo and reverb on it. So it was one of those things. Once I kind of got it under my fingers and kind of figured out the sound, that did actually help kind of propel the rest of the record in terms of what I wanted to do on the guitar. That was one of the first ones that I like learned, you know. We had a list of songs we wanted to do,
so that it's kind of set the tone for ones. It sort of set the tone for you, yes, for the album is what you're saying. And you're extremely well versed in doing those kind of, I mean, the Beatles cover that you did, well, was that Eleanor Rigby? I think.
Yeah, was that the one?
Yeah, that's its signature kind of cover for you, I would dare say.
Yeah, well, Soul Live recorded a whole Beatles record back in the day, and that was one of our favorites to play.
Uh-huh.
But but that song kind of was, like you said, set the tone for me in terms of how I wanted to approach the guitar sound on this record.
Yeah, yeah. Other great covers during that show were, you did a Jeff Beck tribute, which was fantastic, so thanks for doing that. That was really cool. And
absolutely. So that one actually was an original that I wrote in tribute to him, but it kind of sounds
like... Wait, are you kidding me? Hold on. I got that completely wrong, and you just politely sort of just smacked me down?
All right. It's called 76 because that era of like 74 to 76, Jeff Beck made Wired Blow by Blow.
Those two amazing fucking albums.
It kind of, to me, I kind of like wrote what I considered in my mind like could have been an outtake from one of those albums. You know?
Okay, well, you had me, and I know those albums pretty well, but I don't, I'm not like an expert on his discography to know that that wasn't actually a cover, but you got me, man, and I'm red face now, so whoops.
Oh, no, it's all good. That's actually a compliment, so if you think that that was...
Is it? Okay, good. That's what I meant it to be, so there you go. All right, I want to geek out with you for just 2 seconds, Kras. I saw Jason Crosby at the Sweetwater over Thanksgiving, with Graham Lash. It was another Jason Crosby and Friends iteration. And they played that mashup of Lithium and Friend of the Devil. And I thought it was fantastic. And I texted a couple of friends, hey, this is really fucking cool. When you really think about it, when you sing Lithium, it's actually in kind of the vibe of Friend of the Devil. You can put the lyrics into the verse of Lithium and it fits perfectly. And I thought that was really cool. I didn't think anything of it. And then when I'm researching this, I saw that you had done that a couple months before with Jason Crosby. Can you just indulge me and talk to me for 2 seconds about that mashup? And like,
I mean, that was totally Jason's idea. It was like, we just started, and I don't know if he had done that previous to that, but he just started doing it, to be honest. And I was like, I was as surprised as you were. I was just playing in the band.
Oh,
and,
really?
We started playing Lithium and he just started singing Friend of the Devil. I think it was the sound check and we were all just like, whoa.
Right.
And then he did it on the gig and people went crazy, you know, because it was such a...
Well, by the time they get to the chorus and then you're like, oh shit, they're actually doing this. You're like, whoa, hold on one second. Hold on 1 second. You recently moved to LA, more like a couple years or so.
Right before 2019. So,
yeah. I'm from LA, so I was just kind of... I'm always interested in talking to people that go to LA from other places and what their... why'd that occur for you, and how are you doing with it? You like it? It's quite a change.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I do travel quite a bit to the East Coast. A lot of my gigs are back east, so that's been a little frustrating, but you know, it's so beautiful here. You know, like, you know, every morning I walk up into the hills here and it's just like, you know, it's very different from, I lived in New York City for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So very different vibe here. I also have a lot more space here. I was always living in an apartment in New York. Yeah. So that was a huge plus. I have a studio here and, and then in that time I got married and have a 2.5-year-old son. So and also during the pandemic, it was a great place to be because I could be outside all the time. You know?
Yeah, totally. Okay. My youngest is graduating from high school, so I can kind of make... I'm not necessarily tied by my kids to be in Chicago. I have two other ones that I mentioned are older and out. Yeah. So do I move back home, or I love Chicago. I mean, NOLA would be on the list, Stanton, if it weren't so goddamn hot down there all the time. I've become soft living in Chicago. But I need... you guys are both family, Stanton. You have a family?
I do, yeah. So my wife, Lauren, that we mentioned earlier, and my daughter is...
Lauren. Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my daughter is now 18, and she's in her first year of college in Florida at Ringling College of Art and Design.
Okay.
So she's doing great. And then I'm actually going to see her in the middle of April.
Great.
So now it's my wife and I.
So just one. So one kid.
One.
Yeah. Advice to Kraz about being a traveling musician and touring musician and having a little one at home and how that's balanced. How did that, you obviously, you succeeded and she's out the door and in college. Congratulations for that. And what were some of the biggest challenges that you have? And, you know, do you give advice to the youngster over here, Kraz?
Well, you know, he's not younger than me, but you know, he's doing great, man. It's like, he doesn't need advice from me. He's handling it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the biggest challenges, Kraz, for you?
You know, I mean, I miss him a lot when I'm not here, you know.
Yeah.
It's that's the biggest challenge. But then there's just all the others. Like when they do come on the road, it's hard, you know, being a dad and playing shows. And, you know, he's, you know, I'm up at 6 a.m. with him and we have to be up late for shows. And that balance is hard.
Yeah,
to
damn. How do you manage that sleep?
Navigate.
Touring is such a sleep deprivation game. How do you manage that additional stuff?
You're like, it's hard. That part is hard.
You guys want to come on tour again? Oh, great. You know?
Yeah. But you know, it's one of those things where I'd rather have them there, but it's also hard.
Yeah. It's a balance, right? I mean, you miss him, but yeah, it's hard to have on the road. Is your wife in the business, or she's able to just, it seems one of the key ingredients is having a wife or a partner at home that's able to take care of the kid, at least have one parent that's like not traveling a lot.
Yeah. Well, she's an actress, but like hasn't really been working a ton since he was born or when she does, it's just here in town. So
yeah.
It's, you know, we're luckily right now we kind of have a good situation going, but it's always some tough to navigate.
Totally.
You know, it's easier for him to be in one place, but then I'm always moving around. So.
Right. Oh, she's an actor. So did you move to LA for that kind of little bit of that? It makes it easier for her.
We knew each other before, but I've known her for years, but we didn't really start dating until I moved here. So it all kind of happened.
Wow, it's been a whirlwind for you. Congratulations.
Yeah. It's like we've been married almost 3 years.
Uh-huh.
But we together, you know, about 3.5. So yeah, it happened fast.
Yeah. Sure. Well, when you know, you know. And kudos on the album cover. That was phenomenal. When I first looked at that, I was like, oh, who was that? And like, okay, that makes sense.
Always.
And I love what you said about how, well, she agreed to do it. It was a great picture. It's a phenomenal picture from an artistic standpoint too. And I assume that's like somewhere in LA, you nod to the palm trees, but you're talking about, and it's funny because like you were laughing about how my son's always going to see that.
Yeah. It's funny. And it's on.
And just to those who haven't seen it, it's a beautiful picture of your pregnant wife.
Wife with the belly all
there. Yep.
And it's funny because as she started, she was like, oh yeah, no problem, you know, it's fine. And then it's funny now because when we see it in record stores, like when we were in Nashville this last time, we were in a record store and it was like on display and she walked up. And I went to someone, I was like, that's my wife. And she's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's different when you see it in person, you know, and you're like standing next to it. But but she was a good sport about that. I thought it represented the album really well for me because it was like the album material was so much about becoming a dad and getting married and moving to California. It was all about that transition. Mm. And that picture just like was all of it. It was her pregnant in the palm trees behind my house.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it to me, I was like, if you're okay with this, I think it is perfect.
Was it a long conversation or did she have to come around?
No, she was like, sure, if you want to do that, that's fine.
It was a hot picture, man. Yeah. I mean, shit.
It's a hot picture. It's a good picture and it's a cool picture. It just, you know,
so many different angles. Yeah. So cool. Stan, so, you know, there's so much about, and I think about this a lot with you guys, there's so much of, it's so interesting how you've come together from these very, multi-varied and multifaceted musical backgrounds. And Stanton, as I've mentioned several times during this interview, New Orleans is such an, it's, you're almost New Orleans jazz, funk, rock personified. How have you, like, we got Jazz Fest coming up. I'm psyched to be there. I'm looking at the ticket that I printed out because I don't normally print them out, but I laid this one right here for Galactic at Tips on one of the, I think the second Friday or something. Can't wait for that show. But what's the state of New Orleans music? What's the state of New Orleans today? And I also wanted to talk to you guys about Tipitinas, and so I'll come back with that. But kind of what are your thoughts on New Orleans music and being there, and what is in your mind your place in that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, from my perspective, you know, the New Orleans music scene is quite healthy. You know, for me, it's my favorite place in the entire universe. Even though I was born here, I can't imagine living anywhere else. And, you know, I feel so grateful that I can go out on the road, make a living, come back home to New Orleans, and then go see the most inspiring drummers and musicians and draw inspiration, learn new stuff, and be, you know, placed in challenging situations. So I come home and I'll, you know, play my Monday night gig with David Dworkinowski and James Singleton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been able to develop a lot of what I'm doing now and a lot of what I'm doing on this record by playing with those guys. And then there's a great regular gig happening right now over at the Bayou Bar. And Peter Harris is this great bass player. Mm-hmm. He's about my age, maybe just a hair younger. And he does four nights at the Bayou Bar. And so on a Tuesday night, he might have Johnny Vodakovich, or he might have me, or, you know, might have Pedro Segundo or Jameson Ross, mm-hmm. all great guys. And on Wednesday nights, he's got Erlen Riley. And then on Thursday nights, he usually has Jason Marcellus. So I'll go see Erlen Riley on a Wednesday night, just play his absolute ass off, mm-hmm. and I pick up all this stuff. I'm like, I'm going to practice that. I'm going to practice that. I'm going to learn how to do that. And then occasionally I get called to go do the gig, and it's like, you know, and I'm having to learn all these challenging tunes, you know, a lot of Cedar Walton tunes and Horace Silver tunes and Wayne Shorter tunes and a lot of standards. So it's a well of inspiration. Mm-hmm. I can go there and see these great drummers. And then it's also a well of challenge, because I have to learn all that stuff. You know,
you don't have to learn all that. You have to, in your own mind, you have to learn all that. But the thing that comes to my head, it's like, what if you grew up in the forest? Would you still have been a drummer? What kind of drummer would you be?
Well, yeah, I'd probably be a different type of drummer. But
yeah, because it's you're so happily and incredibly enthusiastically grasp onto so many different styles, and then take that on as your own to learn a different style. Not that you don't have your own style. Your own style is this eclectic, incredible ability to be in the pocket in jazz, soul, R&B, funk, all those varieties. But yeah, what would it be like? Just to posit a hypothetical.
It would be different, you know, but for me, emotionally, as a kid, 17, 18 years old, when all my friends were like getting into either heavy metal or thrash metal or punk rock, or, you know, for me, the music that moved me the most was the Meters, and seeing Erlen Riley or Shannon Paul or Johnny Vodakovich play a second line.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, getting into, you know, Fritz Longhair, Earl King, all the Dr. John stuff. And that, all that stuff got me excited emotionally, musically, more than anything else. So I was like, well, shit, I was born in the perfect place for my favorite music. And of course I loved, you know, Led Zeppelin and James Brown. But I was like, well, shit, if I can learn how to play all the New Orleans stuff, that will translate to Led Zeppelin. That will, you know, heavier version of that. But if you can understand the feel of New Orleans, John Bonham was drawing off that. His feel to me is very informed by Earl Palmer and a lot of what came out of New Orleans. And then James Brown, same thing. A lot of what he was doing can be traced back to New Orleans. So I figured if I could get really informed and really good at all the New Orleans stuff, then I would also be able to play all these other things that I love. And then, you know, to really address it, I wanted to learn how to swing, which, you know, I'm still learning how to do. That's a lifelong lesson. But I wanted to be able to play like Curlin Riley, Shannon Powell, and Zigaboo Mortalese.
Why is swing a lifetime lesson?
Because of the nuances and because of it has to be energetic yet finessed.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, time feel has to be strong yet able to be elastic as well.
Hmm.
I mean, there's so many things within it that just to play a good sounding quarter note and make everybody in the room get up and move.
Yeah.
That takes a lifetime, and it takes maturity, and it takes musical depth. You know, Shannon Powell can play a quarter note and move you to tears, and so can Hurlin Riley. But not everybody can do that. But I want to learn how to do that and get close.
Yeah, exactly. I know you can do it. That'll be for your 60s. There you go. Me and you both.
But, you know, but I get to do that with this project. You know, I get to play a quarter note with a shuffle.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I couldn't do that 10 years ago and make it convincing, you know?
Yeah.
So I get to really apply a lot of what I've been working on in this group, which is so exciting for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Kraz, do you see a lot of similarities in what Stanton's saying about how he's taking influences from so many different artists and synthesizing it in his own playing from your own experience and admiration of, let's just say, Allman Brothers and Dead, just to kind of boil it down to a couple different factors for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the last 10 years, and it's funny because even just playing with Phil and playing that music or playing Allman Brothers music, what it did was also bring me back to like the blues, which was like my first love, you know, because they all play the blues. I mean, basically the Grateful Dead, they were an electric blues band, and Allman Brothers were for sure an electric.
Well, I've heard them characterized as they've been characterized as an electric jug band too, but yeah, it just kind of could be the blues.
Well, yeah, that was in the very beginning, they were a jug band, but. Yeah, but so, you know, but Jerry, I mean, he drew from so many different things. But anyway, playing in those situations, you know, with him, and also playing with Derek Trucks quite a bit. And,
yeah.
You know, it you know, brought me back to the beginnings of playing guitar, which was like, I listened to Stevie Ray Vaughan and B.B. King, Albert King, and Hendrix eventually. But yeah, I mean, this project allows me to do that, and, you know, when we play Fever, I'm just playing blues over a shuffle, you know? And it's like, that was what I listened to as a kid, but I don't know that I had that was what I wanted to do necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm realizing how much I love to do that,
yeah,
you know? And it's like, and I'm really drawn to it. So it's nice to be in a project where we can do that.
Yeah.
But then also play like a really mean, like funk groove. And then, you know, the next minute, you know, a ballad, and all of that is in this, you know, the same kind of thing that Stan's talking about with swinging, like playing a blues, like a real blues on guitar is also something that requires like maturity and not overplaying and in a certain amount of taste, you know, that you don't necessarily always have in your 20s or even 30s.
Yeah. Or a restraint, I think, is a perfect way to kind of describe how you play.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, that's Krasno up there. When's he going to come out with some, when's he going to like step out? But that doesn't matter, because the process in a live performance that you go through kind of builds to that point, and it's incredibly tasteful and shows like an amazing level of restraint. You know, you got the chops, you don't have to throw it out there all the time. You know, you see Tedeschi Trucks Band play, and Derek's can just be in the background, just kind of just strumming a couple chords there throughout an entire song. And one of the things I found really interesting about Tedeschi Trucks, the first couple of times I saw them, was just the interplay between Derek and Susan. And I hadn't been that familiar with him in like years ago. Oh, and I would think like, oh, he did a husbandly thing there by just like allow, like giving more of a spotlight to Susan when Derek could be walking over every single song, not to take away anything away from Susan's amazing guitar playing, but using that restraint that great players have, that Stanton has, that you have, others. Yeah, it's an important factor. But absolutely. Not to keep, I don't want to make this all about myself, but I kept thinking about when both of you talked about your influences, I kept thinking of myself as a music lover and listener, that the blues and the rock influences that I had growing up with Zeppelin, classic rock, Dead, Allman Brothers, and then how they, you know, Stanton, you talked about how Zeppelin was, Bonham was greatly influenced by New Orleans beats. And because I'd always wondered, like, what is it that brings me so much into the R&B and jazz and funk that happens so often in New Orleans and is part of that musical scene? And it kind of perplexed me a little bit. But then talking to you guys and doing the own research and listening to your own catalog sort of brought that together for me. And it seems like that's kind of the same thing that's occurred with you, at least, Kras, that there is a rock, there's that rock basis, but there's that funk and R&B and jazz that sort of infiltrates its way in. And that draws me in turn to your guys' music because there's all those sort of similar influences. It's just, it's an interesting cycle and circle of influences in this world. That's not really a question, but it's just sort of something to contemplate.
Think that every musician at their core is a fan, you know? So it's like, we, and what we get to do with this project is express more of that influence that we grew up on, you know, I think Stanton and I have that similarity in that we both love playing different projects and different people. And part of that is because we like to draw from those influences and express ourselves in a way that's not singular, you know? So I think this project allows us to really draw from a lot of different influences in a way that's still like cohesive, you know? And I don't think none of it totally sounds out of place. So, you know, I've appreciated that, especially on this tour and also just the fact that I can bring up any song to Stanton or any idea generally, and he is down with it and vice versa. It's like, we love to kind of explore different territories and see where it's going to take us.
Yeah. It's both separately a part of each of your musical DNA. Stanton, do you want to add to that?
I think it's taken both of us this long to get to this point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
10 years ago, Kras would have said, you know, oh, I want to do this Nina Simone tune. And, I think I suggested it as a ballad, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Brushes. And I think 10 years ago, I would have been petrified to play on a record with Brushes, with ballad. Because, you know, everything is exposed. Like, your time has to be unbelievably solid to play a ballad with conviction. And every little, you know, if you, you know, come in just the slightest bit too quick, you know, if you don't have all that worked out, it's going to sound like, you know, a lawnmower going over a bag of rocks. And, right. You know, it takes a long time to develop that. And then it takes an even longer time to be able to play that convincingly with confidence in a way that you're going to suggest, oh, let's reinterpret this well-known song and let's do it in a way that would completely expose every possible flaw you might have in your playing.
Why not do that?
So, to Kras's point, he can throw out any song and I'll say, yeah, that sounds great, but let's do it in a different way. And now my palette is vast in a way that took me this long, you know?
Till
I was 50 years old.
Wow. It's a lifelong process. Well, I'd be remiss, Kras, if I didn't mention your amazing podcast, Eric Krasno Plus One. I've loved it. You've had some amazing guests on there. So kudos for that, brother.
Thank you.
I also wanted to talk, but I'd be remiss if I also did not take a second to ask you about Tipitina's, Stanton. So happy that Galactic still, that Galactic took it, owns it now as of 2018. Difficult timing, of course. I guess I got a couple questions, but first is, why did you do it?
Yeah, why did we do it? First and foremost, it is our favorite venue in the entire world.
It's one of mine, too.
Multiple reasons. You know, I started going there when I was 16 years old. And as Ivan Neville will say, you know, in New Orleans, Tipitina's is the Madison Square Garden of New Orleans.
Right on.
And you know, you grow up thinking, oh, man, if I could play Tipitina's, then I will have made it, you know?
Yeah.
Then you play there and you're like, oh, man, if I could headline Tipitina's, sell it out, then I will have made it. And then then you get to a point where you're playing, you know, twice during Jazz Fest, twice during Mardi Gras, playing New Year's Eve. And these are all nights that used to be played by the Neville brothers or Dr. John or, you know, the Meters. And so you're now playing those nights, and then the staff started lovingly calling us the Tipitina's House Band.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we started to gradually see it as, oh, you know, we used to joke about it, like when we would play a gig and something, you know, maybe, you know, something we would want to change or something, would say, oh, well, you know, when we own Tipitina's, you know. And of course we were joking at first, but then our manager, you know, we did a festival with the previous owner, and then our manager, we had to do a lot of meetings for this festival, and our manager would come in town, and then sometimes the previous owner would drop our manager off at the airport, and he would say, you know, well, if you ever think about selling Tipitina's, give us a call. And of course we were like, oh, you can't believe you would say that. And he's like, of course I'm going to say that. You know, you can't own it forever.
Right.
So when he started considering selling it, we were, you know, he wasn't a music guy. He never went to Tips. And so we were pretty much the only band he could think of. And so he started considering selling it, and then started considering selling it to us. It was a very long, almost 2-year negotiation process. And it started off, he wanted to sell us 49%. It's a very long story, but eventually we got it to where we could buy it 100%. So I own 20% with the other four members of Galactic. We each own 20% of the building.
Yeah.
And the business and the brand. And, you know, it's it was the scariest thing I've ever had to go through. The negotiation process was super stressful. I was also planning a wedding at the time.
Oh, shit.
And then for me personally, I had to take out half of my retirement account to put in my capital investment. And imagine how stressful that is, trying to get married. And your wife is like, I don't think this is a good idea. And then so you go through with it. And then we had a good 2019,
right?
And then in 2020,
yeah,
close the doors and cancel our tour. So that was, you know, pretty scary, incredibly scary. But long story short, we did what we could as we could. We did the sidewalk shows. We did seated shows to 75 people, where, you know, Tips holds 800. So, you know, everything we did, though, we started, and we did a lot of streaming and a lot of presenting stuff to people on streams. Mm-hmm. So what that did was that created this whole community appreciation,
yeah,
so that once we could open, people started supporting and showing up. And now Tips is doing better than ever. And people know that we really care, and that, you know, we're in it because we love it. And we really take it seriously, and we want to preserve and present our favorite venue in the best way possible. And people recognize that, and they're supporting more than ever.
Yeah, and it's fantastic, Stanton. Congratulations for that, and congratulations to your fellow band members and to Galactic for doing that. There's so few venues that the one that comes to mind is Terrapin Crossroads, and I hope that you don't come to that. It doesn't come to pass that the end that Terrapin Crossroads did, but you know, that's a variety of different reasons, I'm sure. But it's just fantastic that you guys have done that. It's the epitome of independently owned venues, and especially when bands can do that and marshal their forces and be able to move in that direction. Fantastic, man. It's just great. And it's a phenomenal venue. I don't go to New Orleans without going to Tipitina's. So, and I'm sure I know so many people, and I'm sure you're getting psyched for Jazz Fest coming up. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Kraz, if you owned a venue, I could throw you some questions too, but on that subject. But I mean, you've played there a bunch of times. I mean, it's an amazing venue, and I'm sure you can attest to that. Yeah.
The greatest venues in the country.
Yeah. Thanks again for being here. Kraz No More Project. Yeah. Album's called Book of Queens, tribute to women in music and some amazing songs that you guys cover on that album. Thanks so much to both of you for being here. I really appreciate you coming. It's been just an absolute pleasure and an honor to talk to both of you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, have a good one, man.
Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Take care. Thank you, bud.
Thanks, bye. Okay, that was me talking with Stanton Moore and Eric Krasno. What an amazing interview. These guys are doing such incredible work together. Their new album, as I mentioned, is entitled Book of Queens. It's a tribute to female artists and includes so many amazing covers, as you heard. There are so many takeaways from this interview, and if you made it this far, you understand that I was able to utterly geek out with them about the show I saw, talking about the dynamics of an organ trio and how this project slash configuration is kind of the next logical step in both of their musical careers. And it was fun to really also explore how they finally came together as artists to do something, to collaborate with one another, and how that happens so fast is also kind of interesting from a logistical standpoint, how the scheduling's kind of lined up. Because these type of collaborations can be really difficult and really depends on the scheduling of the respective artists, but also from an artistic standpoint and from kind of a musicianship standpoint, Stanton talked about how, you know, he's always learning and developing his own skills, which really speaks to the humble nature of such an amazingly talented musician, such is Stanton. Talked about, and he said he couldn't play some of this stuff that he's playing now. He couldn't play that 10 years ago. And that he's doing it now. He is always developing. There is always something new to learn for him. For Kraz, it's just really a tribute to the amazing musicianship of Stanton and Kraz and what they represent in terms of their own musical development and how they've come along and how it's always a learning process. There's always something new you can learn. And that's an amazing lesson just overall that anyone can take away, not only look at it from a from the perspective of musicians studying and honing their craft as a lifelong enterprise. And, you know, they're both always doing that. And talking about how what the evolution looks like from their own standpoint was really interesting to hear. And also from my own perspective, their thoughts on playing in an organ trio. And of course, Eric Finland is just absolutely amazing on organ. But that very prototypical jazz setup of an organ trio, you know, I got to geek out with them about what it looked like on stage. And it was really, really interesting about the interactions of them and how they're playing and what that actually means, as you heard. And audience interaction as well is really interesting. In a small venue, these guys are not used to playing or don't necessarily, not really not used to, but don't get the opportunity to play in venues that are this intimate. And it's really something Stanton had not done, is that having that audience interaction. He'll get on the mic and he talked quite a bit about the songs that were important to him as did Krasno, but Stanton did say how he was really not very used to doing that, and now he really loves to do that. And Kras reflected on how he's usually playing with larger bands, and how this organ trio, being so intimate, it's easier to improvise, because you can see, you know, you make eye contact, gestures here and there. It's just much easier and dynamic in that sense, to change keys, to change time. They're all kind of looking at each other. It's very intimate, and it was really interesting on so many different levels, as you heard. Really psyched for these guys. So glad that I was able to present this interview. Their new album, Book of Queens, is just extraordinary. I can't recommend enough that you go out and give that a listen. Thanks so much for being here for this episode again. I really appreciate your support, and so glad you're along for these interviews. I've got so many amazing ones coming up here on Roadcase, and so happy and grateful that you are all along for this ride with me. And I want to send a special thank you to Eric Krasno and Stanton Moore for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.